from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week, the U.S. bishops gathered in Indianapolis for their spring meeting, and they focused on issues of immigration, religious liberty, and the upcoming Synod of Youth in Rome. We get a report from Matt Hadro from the Catholic News Agency, who reported from on the ground. Then we turn to summer movies. Register movie critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis talks about films, hits, and misses. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio, joined by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor. The bishops of the United States met this week, Matthew, for their annual spring meeting in Indianapolis. While bishops' meetings sometimes haven't gotten much media attention this year, they're getting quite a few headlines, and probably about because of what they're talking about. I mean, immigration alone is a huge topic in our country right now, and that was one of the things the bishops talked most about.
Well, that's absolutely right, Jeanette. The bishops met in Indianapolis this last week and covered a wide variety of topics. And to fill us in about a lot of those topics and issues confronting the bishops, talking now with Matt Hadro from the Catholic News Agency. Matt, welcome to Register Radio. As far as I know, this is the first time you've been a guest here. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, so it's long overdue to have someone from CNA on Register Radio, especially somebody I know who works so hard in the Washington, D.C. venue. You cover politics as well as church. You do a little bit of everything, don't you?
Yeah, I cover a lot of basically intersection of church and state in Washington, D.C., a lot of different issues. D.C., some national stories too, but mostly D.C.
Mm-hmm. And I know also you cover a lot of issues like religious liberty and the life issues and other things. So thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, absolutely.
So you have you've been in Indianapolis the last couple of days covering the bishops' meeting, and I know this is something that we've been able to talk about a little bit because I've been covering it as well. And first, what was your general impression of the bishops' meeting?
Well, it began with a message to Pope Francis where they noted his recent meeting with President Donald Trump in Vatican City. And, they had hoped that that some fruit would be born from that. And then it continued with, the papal nuncio, Archbishop Christophe Pierre, the apostolic nuncio to the United States, Pope Francis's representative. And he exhorted the bishops to just really practice solidarity, and he had pointed to what some of the Latin American countries have recently pointed out that there's been more solidarity and more collaboration there, and he said that the same thing could happen with in the U.S. if the church is really at the forefront of it. Mm-hmm. I think another really interesting thing that happened on the first day was that they looked ahead to the Synod on Young People that's going to be held next year in 2018. Now, yesterday was the first day that the survey for a lot of the young people was released and is available online. And what was really interesting here is that at the bishops' conference was that, the bishops just started talking about some of the challenges that they are facing with a lot of young people. Cardinal Tobin, Joseph Tobin of Newark, he was saying that studies show that there's an increasing amount of nuns, N-O-N-E-S, mm-hmm. millennials who have no religious affiliation whatsoever. And Bishop Robert Barron in Los Angeles was saying that 50% of Catholics age 30 and under are nuns now. They just don't have religious affiliation. They've fallen away. And so they were just talking about the different challenges and trying to reach young people, especially ahead of the synod next year. So I thought that was one of the really interesting, perhaps the most interesting thing of the last couple of days here. I think they were really talking about how can we better be missionary disciples, as the nuncio had asked them to be. And I think that that was definitely one thing that was repeated throughout many of the presentations and the discussions was, how can we be better missionary disciples? How can the church kind of go out to the peripheries and to the margins, as Pope Francis has been talking about?
Yeah, and I noticed that Archbishop Pierre, in his address to the bishops, stressed a couple of times the importance of listening.
Yeah.
And I had the impression, too, in that back and forth of the bishops regarding the millennials and the vocation for youth, that they want to do a whole lot of listening, don't they?
Yes, and that was one thing that Cardinal Tobin emphasized when he was presenting about the upcoming synod, is that we're going to have to listen to a lot of young people. One thing the nuncio said is listen to people you don't agree with. That was one thing that the bishops were saying is we need to better understand where a lot of young people are today so we know where to reach them, and that was definitely one thing that was repeated.
Mm-hmm. And that idea of listening, of reaching out to those who are suffering, I was almost overwhelmed at the amount of attention that the bishops paid in this meeting, especially yesterday, to the issue of clergy sexual abuse, something that they've been grappling with now for almost, 15 years. What events did the bishops participate in yesterday that really left an impression on you?
Sure. So there was a mass said at the cathedral in Indianapolis for the victims of clergy sexual abuse. And there was a very short and to the point homily given by one of the bishops who was just saying how, he just stressed the need to continue to ask for forgiveness and that this is something that, it's something that's ongoing and the healing process is going to take a while. And so he just continued to stress the need, the need for that. That was Bishop Walton Gregory who gave the homily. Mm-hmm. And at the very end of the Mass, they all knelt, all the bishops knelt and said a prayer for forgiveness and for healing for the victims of the abuse. So I thought that moment in particular was a striking one, that of all the bishops in attendance kneeling in the cathedral.
Yeah, and then they had the 14th annual report from the National Review Board.
Yes.
Do you remember what some of its findings were?
Well, one thing that they really stressed in that presentation was simply that, yes, dioceses have been doing a lot of work to implement a lot of the, a lot of the findings, but there's a lot more work that needs to be done, including on the parish level, that there really needs to be a lot of, that there's been audits of dioceses, but that there needs to be audits of parishes. Because ultimately, this is, these places like parishes and schools, that's where it's a lot of, those are the areas of greatest risk when, mm-hmm. There's situations like these occurring. So that I think there needs to be more audits on the local level.
Yeah, and then I know that the bishops over the last 2 days were very taken up with the issue of immigration. And we had to listen to a report from Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles and Bishop Vasquez of Austin. What were some of their findings?
So just a little bit of development, too. There was a working group on immigration that presented yesterday. And this working group was a temporary thing that was begun by Cardinal DiNardo, the president of the conference, back in November. And they presented their findings yesterday. And then he, just today, had said that the working group was going to continue. So that's definitely a development. And I think that shows a emphasis that, that they think that this is, not only is this issue important, but that it's not going to be going away, especially in a time of, a crisis of migration. Mm-hmm. Another thing that Archbishop Gomez said yesterday was, just the need for, yes, we must be holding authorities accountable on this. And, yes, we must be, standing up for human dignity and for the immigrants. But, that there also needs to be caution against any hysteria and any hysterical reports on this.
Yeah.
On this whole issue.
And then there was that intervention of sorts, I think, of Bishop Habash of the Syrian Catholics.
Yes. Yes, that was so, and that was during the discussions yesterday, and he gave a very impassioned plea for the U.S. Church to really be a good Samaritan. Now, he's a bishop in the Syriac Catholic Church in the Eparchy of Our Lady of Deliverance, and he was just calling on the U.S. to really be good Samaritans to Christians in Syria and Iraq. And he also brought up the recent detaining of Chaldean Christians. So there were Chaldean Christians living in the Detroit area who had had previous criminal records that Immigration and Customs Enforcement picked up a few days ago, and they are currently being detained and set to be deported very soon. And so there have been a lot of people trying to work behind the scenes to rectify this case, because if they're deported, they would go back to, you know, an area where there's been genocide committed back in Iraq. So anyhow, Bishop Habash brought this up in his, gave a very impassioned plea yesterday, saying that the U.S. needs to be the Good Samaritan and not to deport these Christians back into a war zone.
Mm-hmm. So immigration seemed to be sort of bleeding into almost all of the conversation, including on the second day, on Thursday, when the bishops took up the vote for religious liberty as to whether or not to make the ad hoc committee on religious liberty a permanent feature of the conference. And, of course, I know that passed. But there seemed to be quite a bit of, not an enormous amount of opposition, but there were some expressions of lack of approval for this idea because of the going away, so to speak, of the ad hoc committee. I know this is all sounding very inside baseball, but were you struck by the fact that immigration continued to sort of percolate in their conversation?
Yes, it was interesting because, so just to give a little backstory, they were voting to make this committee permanent on religious freedom. There were 53 votes against. The measure passed, but, you know, there was definitely some opposition. And one thing that was brought up was that the working group on migration, which ended their work yesterday, was originally not going to be continued. And a couple of the bishops had said the optics of this, would not be good, of continuing the Religious Liberty Committee permanently, but ending the work of the Working Committee on Migration. The thing is that there is already a Standing Committee on Migration. And today, Cardinal DiNardo did end up continuing the work of the Working Group on Migration.
Yeah,
so
was
that
it?
Was the,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that was the development today.
Right. And is that, in a way, Cardinal DiNardo, as president of the USCCB, of the Bishops' Conference, is that his way, too, of sort of making sure that everybody's heard and also that the optics are fixed?
Yes, that very well may have been the case, especially since there were so many votes against making the Religious Liberty Committee permanent.
Mm-hmm. So the upshot, I think, of the meeting is that immigration seems very high on their priority. Health care, they talked about. Religious liberty is something that they discussed. What else jumped out in terms of their discussions that anyone who's not able to attend can remember?
Sure. I mean, I would just reemphasize the discussions on the Synod were really interesting, and I think that there was a lot there that they were talking about. One bishop in particular, Bishop Estevez of St. Augustine, of St. Augustine, Florida, he was saying that there's really a growing desire for silence among young people and especially for Eucharistic adoration. And I thought that was really interesting what he had to say on that, and just how, that's definitely, perhaps one area of need that the bishops could be meeting.
And I think it's safe to say that the bishops are very engaged heading into the Synod, aren't they?
Yes, from what I saw, that was definitely the case.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thanks so much for your ongoing coverage of these meetings and also for your work with CNA. I'm looking forward to reading your articles and also to what you have next in store for us.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure speaking.
When we come back, we are joined by Register movie critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis and his picks for best and worst movies of the summer.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free six-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the six free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your six free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen. We are now joined by Register film critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis. Deacon Stephen, it's great to have you on.
Thanks, Jeanette. It's great to be here.
So summer is in full swing, and there have been quite a few summer movies so far, I have to admit, none of which I have seen. But thankfully, Matthew loves movies, and he's seen a few this summer. And so I think where we'll start with this conversation about summer films, we do this every year. It's always a lot of fun to see what I should be seeing. But
well, there's usually something.
There's usually something.
Hopefully more than one or two.
Good. Well, let's start right there. What have you recommended so far this summer?
Almost nothing. This isn't the first summer that I've said I think this is the worst summer since I've started reviewing, but this year I'm pretty sure that I'm right. We have a summer that has been wall-to-wall sequels, remakes, mm-hmm. and or what I'm calling Big Bang movies, which doesn't mean that they're spectacular and explosive, but it means that they're movies like The Mummy that don't just want to start a franchise or a series. No, they want what has become the new Hollywood Holy Grail. They want a Marvel-style shared universe, a mega franchise with multiple overlapping series. This is very difficult to do, and so far only Marvel has really successfully done it.
Okay. So that's, where do I start? Where do I start? Go ahead, Matthew, because well, you've seen them.
I was going to say, what do we attribute this trend of trying to create these universes? DC, of course, is trying to build its own.
And they're not the only ones. And so Wonder Woman now is the first successful film in that franchise. But this year alone, we have seen Kong Skull Island, which is the second installment in Warner Brothers and Legendary's MonsterVerse, which also includes the last Godzilla movie, The Mummy, is Universal's launching of what they're calling their dark universe for monsters, including Dracula, the Invisible Man, the Wolf Man, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and so forth. Even Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, mm-hmm. was hopefully going to launch a series of six films in which individual knights and even Merlin would get their own spinoffs. What do we attribute it to? It's very simple. And as a comic book fan and someone who really loves Marvel Comics, I hate to say this, but it's Marvel's fault. I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is the biggest thing in Hollywood history. It's bigger than Star Wars, James Bond, Harry Potter. It's bigger than anything. And Hollywood has always had an originality problem. That's becoming more and more the case, and what they're trying to do now is to replicate that. Disney has made that work, and everybody, Warner Brothers, Universal, everybody wants a piece of that.
And of course, we don't want to jump too far ahead into the fall, but we have the whole Star Wars franchise rolling forward. But I guess with the Marvel Universe, setting aside the peculiar 1970s style trailer for I think the next Avengers film or Thor film, Ragnarok, the whole Marvel Universe does seem to be pretty well thought out, which is something that these other ones don't seem to put a great deal of effort into.
I think that a lot of these other companies forget that the Marvel Universe was really built from the outset on the backbone of Robert Downey Jr.'s performance as Tony Stark in the original Iron Man. They created a relatable character who was funny, that people connected to. He was smart. He had a magnetic personality, but he also had a moral arc. The Iron Man was fundamentally about the redemption of Tony Stark, a person who is selfish, who is amoral, but who grows a conscience and who tries to do the right thing. Unfortunately, that's become a template for too much of the superheroes. Now everybody's a semi-redeemed bad boy, a brawler, a thief, an assassin, somebody who's trying now to go straight. In fact, other than Captain America and now spectacularly Wonder Woman. These are the only two heroes who really stand out for having high ideals as a fundamental part of their character and really living by those ideals.
You know, Wonder Woman was probably the last review of yours that I read, and it did quite well on our website. And so I'm reading this review and I'm thinking, wow, Stephen's actually speaking highly of a superhero movie. Why? What did Wonder Woman do so well?
Well, I just mentioned the first thing. You know, Christopher Reeve really kicked off the whole superhero genre in a big way with the first two Superman movies, and he established the ideal of a superhero as an aspirational, inspirational figure, somebody that children would look up to and even adults would want their children to see them as. And it's been a long time since we've seen a superhero who really fit that bill. Beyond that, you know, I have to recognize the fact, as a father of four sons but also three daughters, that I've grown up all my life with heroes on the screen, from Superman to Luke Skywalker to Indiana Jones, who look like me. It's something that I take for granted. And in a fundamental way, Wonder Woman is something new. She's the only classic superhero who is a woman and is not either a knockoff of a male superhero like Batgirl or Supergirl, or a part of a mostly male team, like the Invisible Woman or the Wasp. And she's in Superman's Power League. She's someone that young girls have looked up to all their lives.
Right.
There have been stories of women in screenings breaking down and crying during the fight scenes because it was so moving for them to see this figure really take center stage, something that Marvel, having done more than 20 superhero movies so far, has yet to do.
And the director of the movie also made her mark because she was indeed a woman who's producing a superhero movie, the first, correct?
It is. Patty Jenkins is now the woman who has directed the highest grossing picture of any woman in history. And I think the fact that Wonder Woman is directed by a woman is important. There's a critical scene in the middle of the film. It's set in World War I, and this is in the trench warfare. This is in no man's land, and she climbs up a ladder. It's a very dramatic moment, and she goes striding into battle, and the Germans are firing at her. And then the other soldiers, Steve Trevor, who's played by Chris Pine, and the other soldiers come up behind her, and she's absolutely the center of the scene. But what you're thinking when you're looking at her, you're getting that superhero, she's so awesome thing, and not the way that you would with many male directors, and Michael Bay stands out as an obvious example. You're not thinking, she's so hot. That's the way that heroines are too often shot in these films, but you've got a woman behind the camera, and that does make a difference.
Well, it is one that I am looking forward to seeing with my husband, because I've heard it's something that both of us could really enjoy. So you have given me one movie to go on and see. Let's talk a little bit about some of the failures so far this summer that I know you've written about them, but let's give a little tease so that our listeners can go online and see how you've reviewed some of our movies.
Sure. Well, The Mummy was the latest such failure, a movie that tries so hard to kick off a shared dark universe of universal monsters that it fails to tell a story. It gets bogged down with too much mythology and not enough thought. King Arthur, directed by Guy Pearce, very bad, miscalculated attempt to update the King Arthur legend, turns a character who was defined by his ideals and by the ideal of chivalry and nobility and honor and so forth, turns it into a revenge story. Mm. Really, really bad. A lot of people liked Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I admit it's a lot of fun and it has some scenes that work, but there's also a real slow section in the middle. I didn't like the fundamental conflict, and it had some of that objectifying of the female characters that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
The one I did find myself disagreeing with you a little bit was Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yes. So tell me what you liked about that.
Well, I thought just that the way that they were able to wrap up the story, although we're likely to be punished with yet another one,
well,
I thought it was a nice wrap-up and made you completely forget number four.
Well, I'll give you this, and I said this in my review. The one thing that all of these movies have had good ideas in them, and the good idea in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, is that the third film in the series, the end of the trilogy, At World's End, ended in a way that was a very, very bad idea. It punishes Orlando Bloom's character, Will Turner, by making him the doomed captain of a ship that collects people who are drowning at sea, and he's separated from Keira Knightley's character, Elizabeth Swann, who he's had a baby with, and he can only see her once every 10 years. He only sees his kid once every 10 years. That was a terrible idea. This movie undoes that, and so I do give it credit for that much.
And now, of course, I have to ask, are there any films coming up this summer, either that are serious or perhaps they're not necessarily serious, but that you're really intrigued by and looking forward to seeing?
Well, I've seen Cars 3, and it's a little bit like The Last Pirates of the Caribbean in that it offers a good end to the franchise, and certainly it's better than the last one, Cars 2, but not a great film. I do like the way that it ends, though. Coming up, I have some hope for War of the Planet of the Apes. I liked the last Planet of the Apes movie. I think that was Dawn. There's Dawn and Rise, and I get them mixed up. there's Dunkirk from Nolan, yeah. A World War II movie set in 1940 about the evacuation of Allied troops. That looks really good. First, last, and most of all, I am a Spider-Man fan, and so I'm hoping that Marvel pulls it off one more time with Spider-Man Homecoming.
I note that you did not include Despicable Me 3 or Transformers. I think is it Transformers 14 or 15 at this point?
the sheer number of some of these sequels that we've had, I think it was the sixth Alien movie, the fifth Pirates of the Caribbean. It's just unbelievable that some of these franchises are lingering way past what should be their sell-by date. But with Transformers, Michael Bay somehow knows how to connect with his audience, and he's just made them work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Matthew, which movie have you most enjoyed lately?
I think definitely Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Without question. If for no other reason, then once again, it has allowed the radical feminists to demonstrate their total irrelevance and total lack of connection to the audience, that their complaints about this film are so ungrounded in reality that I found it at times almost humorous.
There is a positive feminist dimension to the film, but it's certainly not a radical one. And I think as Wonder Woman confronts the sexism and chauvinism of 1918 London, I don't think that anybody in the audience, liberal or conservative, is going to be not on her side.
Right. Any movie that that has complaints from the feminists about its heteronormative tendencies, that should never be used in a movie review.
I love it. Well, you guys are a lot of fun. It's good to listen to you and know which movie I need to see next with my husband. So thanks a lot, Stephen, Matthew, for filling us in on summer movies.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. And also check out Deacon Steve Greidanis' films at decentfilms.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.